Welcome to New Oral Cultures Podcast. I'm Dario Linares, and I'm back with you for another interview episode before I go off on a little bit of a summer hiatus. And joining me today to discuss all things podcasting is Laurie Beckstead, Professor of Audio and Digital Media in the RTA School of Media at Ryerson University, Toronto. Laurie, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm always happy to chat about podcasting. Thanks, Dario.
Yeah, it seems like we've a little bit of deja vu here. We were only on a call the other day, but I guess it's a subject that there's plenty of avenues to approach.
We could talk all day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll give it an hour. That'll be enough before we all want to go do something else.
Okay, we'll limit it. We'll see how we go.
But it's great to also be joined by a couple of Laurie's research assistants at Ryerson, Anna Ashite and Valentina Gastaldo. Welcome. How are you guys doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm looking forward to talking to you all.
Yeah, happy to be here. It's great.
There's many reasons that we decided that we wanted to do this this particular episode, but just as a little bit of background, Laurie, we'll me and you can have a chat about. We first met back over in Mainz in Germany when we were doing a conference together. And I think one of the things that sort of came out for me was how much sort of crossover there was between not just my work and yours in terms of the kinds of things that we were interested in, but also in terms of how the concerns about what podcasting is or the interests in what podcasting has become in the media landscape has lots of different correlations, but then lots of different little avenues that it seems to go off on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really interesting being at that conference and seeing all of the different ways that scholars are talking about podcasting and podcast audiences and the affordances of the medium and exploring all of that. And I remember one thing that really stuck with me from that conference was just the feeling of being in a new area. You know, podcasting is pretty young as a medium, and so it's really exciting to be doing scholarship and researching and just participating in the podcast landscape in general at this time, because it's a really fascinating time to do it.
Actually, it's funny because even from sort of 2014, 2015, when podcasting perhaps sort of, you know, crossed over onto the mainstream in a way that it became more visible beyond the people who just do podcasting, but even now into 2020, and particularly maybe this has been amplified by what's happening with COVID and everything like that, it seems that maybe we're on the cusp of another sort of development on, or another moment of change perhaps around the ways in which podcasting is moving into this arena of becoming more professionalized, maybe even sort of being assimilated into the way that we understand, you know, more traditional media working. I mean, do you see that right now?
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people are lamenting this as perhaps sort of the death of what we thought podcasting might be, in terms of, you know, one of the things people talked about a lot at the beginning of this this new medium was that there was this lack of gatekeepers. So traditional broadcast, you know, you had to kind of knock on the front door of the CBC or the BBC or the commercial radio stations and say, please let me in. And only if chosen few ever could have access to that equipment and that broadcasting. So it was inaccessible to most. And so podcasting came along and, you know, quote unquote, anyone could do it. Obviously, there are still some limitations in terms of access to equipment and so on and so forth. But obviously, the bar had come way down in terms of whose voices could be heard. At the very beginning of the popularization of podcasting, I'd say that the voices that were being heard were still those gatekept voices, meaning that a lot of the popular podcasts came out of places like NPR and the BBC and the CBC and so on. So they were kind of repurposed radio programs. And then it kind of blew open and sort of any independent podcast producer had a chance at becoming a popular podcast host and becoming well known in that way. And so now it feels like we're kind of coming almost full circle, where in order to be heard in this massive landscape of, you know, millions of podcasts, it goes back to, if you're part of a network that has, you know, money behind it and a PR machine, then you will, of course, be heard in this landscape. So, you know, there's a bit of hand-wringing, of course, about the independent podcasters and whether there's still a place for them. I think there certainly is still a place for them in terms of niche. I think if say, as a producer, you're interested in making a podcast and you're hoping for it to be a general interest podcast. That for me seems like a huge mountain to climb if you are not part of one of these new big networks in terms of getting heard. But as someone who might operate in a niche space, I think there's still huge opportunity for people, you know, because of the nature of niches. I mean, you could be talking about something very, very particular, and you'll find enough of an audience globally who is interested in that specific thing to still kind of make your mark.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's slightly oversold, this idea that podcasting was this independent arena where everybody who made an independent podcast was suddenly, you know, had a huge audience, because it just wasn't the case. And just mm-hmm. perhaps there's just an accentuation of the sort of two tiers, the way that podcasting works. And I think some of the interesting avenues for discussion, I mean, we'll come back to this later on, is the reasons why people do podcasting. Because, you know, if you look on social media and you know, a lot of the way that podcasting is written about, particularly from North America, I think, is how do you get a big audience and how do you make money? And that's the only question, really. And I think that, you know, there are lots of other reasons why people do podcasting, as we'll come on to with a lot of your work. But just to go back for a second, obviously you know you're working in Ryerson and you're teaching audio, but did you have a big leap, say, from the commercial sector into academia, or were you always an academic? What's a little bit of your biography, how you came into this area?
I'm not even sure how to answer that question, honestly. So let's see, going way back, the way I came into this area was I was a huge music head growing up as a teenager. You know, as most of us are, like, music kind of defined who I was and defined who my friends would be depending on what kind of music they liked and so on and so forth. So music naturally led me to get involved at the campus radio station when I first went to school. And I was studying science, and I remember having a moment where I was laying a needle down on a record and thinking, boy, I'm really going to miss this when I graduate from school and I can't do this thing anymore. And so that's when I thought, oh, maybe I should actually do this. So I studied broadcasting. I worked in campus community radio for a good 10 years. So I never really worked in the commercial sector of radio, which is kind of interesting. And I found that campus community radio kind of, as I got into academia, it had a lot of similarities in terms of, I guess in terms of, you know, not having to always worry about the almighty dollar and able to explore some ideas and to work outside of the mainstream and try to be inclusive and diverse and that sort of thing. So that was a big influence on me at campus and community radio. So then I was a journalist. I did work for CBC Radio for a while. I was also a music journalist. So, you know, I kind of honed my chops at the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in terms of journalism. And yeah, that's kind of how. So, and then I ended up getting into teaching. I found a passion for teaching and then kind of almost got hooked into academia. So I never set out to become an academic. I kind of studied a lot of different things, and I don't have a PhD. I have a master's degree.
But you've got three undergraduate degrees. I read that.
I have three undergraduate degrees.
I'm sort of incredible,
you know, yeah, just like a jack of all trades, master of none, which I think is the reason why media and podcasting and sound studies really interests me, because it encompasses so much more than just one specific discipline. Sure. I mean, it is a discipline unto itself, but when you're doing media or producing media, you can be talking and exploring about anything, which I love. So that really appeals to my nature in that way.
And in your sort of experience of working in this field within academia over the years. I mean, it's always interesting to me because I come from film. And so I automatically have a sort of audio visual mindset and almost too much of a kind of chronological sense of what media are important. Do you know what I mean? So it's almost kind of like students who would go into studying radio, let's say, it's kind of an old fashioned thing to study, you could argue. I've wondered, you know, with the arrival of podcasting and then you placed it within the context of sound studies there, has there been a shift or a development in interest in sound as a topic of study for students, would you say?
I think so. I think that podcasting has really rocketed it back up in popularity in terms of what students are choosing. So the program that I teach in, the RTA School of Media, it's a broad program that teaches sort of the context of media, so media theory, and then production of media, and then the business of media. So those are the three main areas. And students can really choose to study a wide range of different things. And so, you know, once upon a time, radio was more popular than it was amongst students. We always have a core group of students who are still very, very interested in that. But now that podcasting is on the scene, people are exploring sound media in ways that they weren't before. So students assumed it meant radio, and that didn't seem very glamorous to some of them. But now there's this whole new opportunity, and we're seeing lots more students coming into it. But I mean, Anna and Valentina, you are both just heading into your fourth year of this program. So what are your perspectives on, you know, what role sound, or what, you know, whether sound is something that you'd be interested in studying?
So yeah, I feel like sound, especially in RTA, like in the School of Media, is a very big thing. Like, I came into Ryerson with a focus, working with visuals, like video, and then I ended up taking audio just because it was very important for movies and filmmaking to, if you have a bad audio, you have actually a bad picture. People will notice the bad audio. So I decided to take that course of intermediate audio and understand more about the role of audio into the movie world. And I actually came fascinating because there's so much more about audio than just what is in the movie or what you see, because audio is such that you don't really notice. So I feel like when it comes to media, audio is just a very useful thing. And it's a very intimate thing. It's a very personal thing that I really became in love with. And not in the technical side. I have a lot of friends who go into the technical side. They love like editing and mixing, but I'm more of a theory person. So I became way more interested in the theory of sound, which is what I really like about RTA. It lets you choose from a range of like things you want to work with. What about you, Anna?
Yeah. So my, I would say like my interest in radio and audio kind of just happened unexpectedly. When I got into RTA media production, I wasn't expecting really to have an interest in radio. And I think largely that's because in high school or, you know, post-secondary school, you're mostly getting your hands wet on like visual media. You're not really getting that audio side. I would like to see how, you know, high schools are developing audio now that podcasting has really surged. But I really fell in love with being able to tell a story. And I think being able to do it independently, you can pick up your phone and do a voice recorder and you don't have to really rely on anybody else. You really have full control of how you want to tell those stories. And I think in the radio audio class and with Lori's class, Beyond the Radio Format, I really got the opportunity to really create my own vision. And I loved it. And I now know that I want to get into audio development for sure.
Has that sort of interest for both of you in audio changed your sort of outlook in the way that maybe your generation or all of us really for that matter communicate? Because I always found it interesting that over the years that I've been teaching, it really is noticeable how that sort of chatter at the beginning of a class, so say, you know, you're just about to give a lecture and all the students are sat down. And when I first started, there was a lot more actual audio talk that people were discussing things with each other, whether it was just the weekend or what they did last night or whatever it might be. Whereas now I find that people's heads are buried in text messages and it's all about text. And I'm just wondering whether you think that, you know, your sort of appreciation of sound has highlighted that sound communication is something different from textual communication, and whether maybe we're with podcasting and then with, you know, things like AI voice recognition and this kind of thing, we're moving more into an era where using audio rather than text is sort of coming back a little bit more.
Yeah, I think for me, I came to appreciate much more audio just because me and my friends, we have this thing, we have a day in the week, we only talk in voice messages because you can actually hear more about the voice of the person and the what you want to say, I know there's a feeling to that. I don't really know how to put into words. Then when you see a text message, you just don't notice. So for me, it's much more a valuable experience. I would say it's an experience. It's truly an experience. Other than text being something that is just passed on, you just read and you interpret in your own way. But when you hear the voice of someone, you kind of interpret with the person's perspective almost. I don't know how to put into words, but it's very interesting. It definitely made me appreciate much more the audio and the talking face to face, even face to face. Like I read it, I appreciate much more talking with my face on FaceTime or face to face than texting them.
It's so interesting to me that you actually specifically make a point of on this day, we will only use voice messages. That's great.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I live very far away from my friends. Like they're living in another country. And since I don't see them and there isn't this personal interaction between me and them, it became a sort of like, oh, we can do this and then can be very interesting and we can listen to each other. And actually, when it comes to audio, it's almost putting effort and time into the other person. Because when you can read, you can just skim through. You don't really need to read everything. You can just grab like important pieces. But when you have a voice message, you have to kind of listen through. Some of my friends like send 20 minute audios. And it's just like, I can't believe I have to listen to all of this. But then it's just the effort in the relationship. Like it's a group of friends and you listen to it because it's a conversation, you know. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, that's really insightful because the idea of spending the time to listen, you know, that's necessary for podcasts. I know that there's that sort of fast forward button, which kind of drives me crazy. The idea that you could listen to it at double speed or whatever. And I know lots of people do that because they just want to, you know, be able to consume as many podcasts as possible in a short amount of time. But there is in this linear based, like time based linear medium, you do have to just sit down and listen and spend the time with it. And you're getting at something, I think, audiences love podcasts because they feel like you are having a relationship with the person who's speaking. You know, this idea of the human voice being like a really strong connector between people. So as you're listening to people speaking and you're spending time with them, literally you are sitting down and spending that time. You can't just skim through it. And you're hearing their voice. You're hearing all of the nuance in the way they're speaking and the language they're using and their accent and their tone of voice, that you feel a really strong human connection between people. And even and without the visuals, an even perhaps stronger one, because then we're not subject to all of the biases, conscious or unconscious, that we may have about how somebody looks or their body language and that sort of thing. So really just spending time is with the human voice is so important.
Anna, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because nowadays, like when somebody calls you, I think the first thing you're thinking of is why. Like there must be something really important.
Or
it's like the first thing, like, oh, why? Why are we talking? Why are we, you know? And it's so interesting that podcasting has that ability to kind of allow us to have these conversations. There's some things that just can't be said through text. We can't get the emotion. We can't really hear a laugh. We can't really tell a story. So while not everybody in our friend groups want to pick up the phone and have an hour conversation, podcasts are giving us that opportunity to have those conversations, to sit with friends and listen and kind of be in that culture anyway. So I appreciate that aspect.
Laurie, you're an interesting person maybe to comment on what is the sort of that foundational question, i.e. what is a podcast? What is podcasting? And particularly in its relationship to radio and other sound art forms, because you've been the journalist aspect of it and now you're teaching it, and also, you know, relationship to sound studies and stuff. I mean, where do you sit on that sense that does podcasting have a discrete identity now, or is it for you a sort of subset of radio?
I sometimes go back and forth on that, but I think where I usually land is it is its own thing. I mean, certainly it is its own medium. When we look at the history of the development of various media over time, it's so interesting how when a new medium comes along, there's an assumption about how the old medium will go away because now we don't need, television comes along and so long radio because now we've got pictures, so why would we need radio? And so we learned the lessons over time that, you know, a medium doesn't come along and replace something else, but it affords some new experiences. So I think if we think about the affordances of podcasting as a medium, it definitely gives us a number of new things. Now, they are all very related to radio. So for example, one of the quote unquote new things that podcasting is giving us is access to audio fiction, or what we used to call radio drama. So you can connect that back to radio, but ultimately, radio was no longer performing that function. It became perhaps too expensive. You know, commercial radio was never interested in doing audio drama, that sort of thing. So little by little, you know, eventually even the CBC cut its entire, you know, radio drama unit, and that was over. And now podcasting is able to fill that need. Radio, of course, we talked about the gatekeeping in radio and how that's not necessarily a thing in podcasting. Radio also came out of this tradition of, hello, you're listening to radio, and this is very important and very polished. And, you know, and so podcasting kind of blew the lid open a little bit on that in terms of just opening it up to people being themselves, being very authentic, you know, talking about the fact that they were recording in their bedroom closet, you know, and their cat's meowing or whatever. And it's kind of like a peek behind the curtain. And I think that culture in general has moved in that direction, that we want that. We do not want the polished broadcaster voice, and just kind of nobody relates to that. So podcasting helped that along as well.
To me, I've been writing or trying to think a little bit about the way in which the early researchers in podcast studies, if we can call the discipline that, talk about podcasting. And there's a lot of conflation or use of nomenclature that presupposes things. And what I mean by that is we tend to talk about podcasting one in the same as a group of technologies, as a group of practices, and that is under the umbrella of the idea of a medium. So, you know, the technologies of podcasting, you need a range of technologies for a discrete idea of what podcasting does comes out of. So, you know, a lot of people talk about RSS being the, you know, the sort of spark of what made podcasting different to radio in the way that it's broadcasting. But it's funny how in the literature, nobody ever talks really about very much about microphones or even, you know, MP3 files. They're just kind of like a given. It's specific technologies that people reflect. And then, you know, if you read some of the stuff on intimacy, particularly Lance and Martin's book on podcasting, they talk a lot about, you know, the use of the headphones and using in-ear earbuds, producing that sort of intimate feeling. And so there's these technological interrelationships that seem to feed podcasting. And then, you know, you can think about the ways in which we practice podcasting, both at the production end and at the listening end, seem to have their own set of affordances or their own kind of shape and the way that we use it. And it's very, very different, for example, that we don't tend to think of television or radio or cinema as something that we actually practice, I don't think, in the same way from its very birth. You know what I mean? It's something weird about the way we talk about the medium of podcasting as having this practice element to it, whether you're listening or whether you're producing it. I'm still, as you can hear, I'm still trying to wrap my head around
and,
that.
And it's fascinating. It's really insightful to me to hear you say that, the idea that we just conflate podcasting as a medium and podcasting as a practice. And because in my mind, they are conflated too. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's so interesting. I think that says a lot about the medium, that conflation exists, that we never did kind of think of TV as a practice, because the average person could not ever be involved in the practice of television.
Exactly.
Whereas, you know, everybody knows somebody who does a podcast or is about to launch one or is thinking about launching one, right? So that's really, really fascinating that we wrap it all up in the idea of practice and production and the medium itself.
Yeah. And even listening is like the practice of sharing, the practice of recommending. These things are all seem to be inherent in the listening process itself as a social practice, as well as just the, you know, the physical act of listening.
In terms of that social aspect and the recommendation, one thing that I've noticed, so students in my classes, you know, they come into a class the first day, how many of you listen to podcasts? Usually there's some that say they don't, and I'll ask them why they don't. And a lot of them will say, I just don't know where to start. There's so much out there. And then I'll talk to other students who say, you know, I don't really know what to listen to, or I'm a little embarrassed to say that I don't know that podcast you're talking about. And I try to put people's minds at ease. I think there's this sense that if you like podcasting, you should be in on what the good podcasts are. It's sort of like kind of being like part of a club. Mm. Like if I say, oh, have you heard the new insert name of podcast here, that if you quote unquote like podcasts, you should be able to say, oh yeah, I've heard that one, listen to it all the time kind of thing. And we just need to get past that idea that it's even possible to be aware of all of the podcasts that are out there, and that it's not a shameful thing if someone brings up a podcast and you don't know it. I always thought I had to be that person too, as the professor of podcasting, so to speak. If a student came to me and said, you know, oh, well, you've listened to this podcast, right? And if I said no, that somehow I was failing in my job. But so that idea of the recommendation, the being able to talk to each other about podcasting, initially it felt like a little bit of a club sort of situation. If you're in the club, you're in on this, but it's exploded so much that I think that's no longer possible, which is probably a good thing.
Hmm. Anna and Valentina, do you think that there is a separation, say, between podcasting in your mind, or in, you know, if you can speak for your entire generation, you know, like I'm about to ask you to, you know, that sense that podcasting is just another platform, another medium, say like television or cinema, or does it hold some kind of different, you know, status, let's say?
I would say yes and no. Like, I really think it depends where the group of like people you're talking to or referring to. I know a lot of people don't see podcasts as like another medium, but it's so interesting you're talking about social relationships in terms of podcasting. And I was just doing some research yesterday and I found this thing called Podcasting Brunch Club. And I never heard of it before. Oh, yeah. It was kind of book club for podcasts. And they have like all these meetups around the world where people just get together and talk about podcasting. And I thought it was very fascinating because I never thought that would be a thing. Like, I know me and my friends, we talk about podcasting a lot, and we like regarding an episode or a series that we like, but in terms of a community building exercise, I never thought podcasting would actually be a medium that would strengthen these relationships. So it was very interesting for me. And me as a, like, personally, I never thought this was possible. And now I'm starting to see more and more, and perhaps more people from my generation or my network group will be more in contact with that in the future.
Yeah, I would say that I hold it on the same level as television, or maybe not television, but the way we look at Netflix has now become its own form, its own platform. And podcasting has as well. Like, we're no longer just sharing what TV shows we watch. It's what podcasts. People are sending me their podcast recommendations. So it's become another way of socializing. Together we listen to podcasts. In the car together.
Oh, really? Me
and my sister, we listen to Two Dope Queens. So it's becoming a different form of community, a different form of enjoyment between two people. You're sitting down, you're listening together the same way we would watch TV together. So I would say that it depends on the person, but I would say that our generation is listening together, which is great.
It's so interesting you mentioned about that, Anna, because I became very familiar with podcasting because of my father. My father was always listening to podcasts in the car. And I found very easy to talk with my grandparents, who were big radio fans, if we had something in common to talk about. So I think like this generational thing where you can talk to other generations about something they were familiar as kids or growing up, it's very useful. And I feel like that podcast allow us to do that.
I mean, it's interesting because there is a sort of lot of debate about the, you know, quote unquote, older generation using podcasts, because obviously the difference between... Well, one of the differences between radio and podcasting is simply radio. You push one button and then you hear something. Whereas obviously there's a labor of kind of curating what you're going to listen to and that goes in, and you have, you know, being au fait with the technology, again, without stereotyping, is kind of like seen to be perhaps not the first thing that a certain generation would automatically go to do. So it's interesting that you say that. Laurie, I mean, moving on to the areas that you've been researching around this, and obviously we kind of bonded over the question of podcasting in academia and perhaps what possibilities lie therein, not just in terms of studying podcasting, but what podcasting could be potentially as a research tool. So do you want to just sort of talk about maybe give a quick overview of the session we did the other day and this sort of idea around podcasting as a potential for peer reviewing?
Sure, yeah. So I wanted to investigate that very idea. You know, can we use podcasts as a peer reviewable or part of the peer review process for traditional academic scholarship? And so it's a really fascinating field to be in, again, because podcasting is so new, and even just the idea of using podcasts in this way is also very, very new. So it's only been happening over the past few years or so. And so I thought, okay, let's try making a podcast that is meant to be an opportunity to discuss a research project at the stage where it's pre-publication. So the data has been collected, the data has been analyzed, you know, it's been well thought through. Let's sit down and have a conversation between the researcher who's doing this project and a peer in the field to talk about that research, what some of the outcomes were, what some of the problems with the methodology may have been, where this research might take us, what other avenues it could take us down, and to just be able to have that discussion around it with a view to kind of refining perhaps the research before it reaches its final stage, quote unquote final stage, which is the published paper. So academia, of course, is this this very entrenched system of here's what counts, here's what doesn't count. And in fact, I remember the day that I was asked to create a CV where the first thing on the CV was number of publications, and it just wanted you to plug in a number. And they didn't want you to tell, to say what those publications were about. And I felt so dehumanized by that. I thought, really, this is like, it's a bean counting exercise as a professor and a researcher. They just want to know how many articles you published. They don't care what they were or whether it was important or not. So I just, I bristle at that idea. So my MO in research and scholarship has always been to try to disseminate the outcomes of the research in alternate formats. So for example, I collected a lot of data about who is on the air on radio stations in Toronto and other major markets in Canada in terms of, you know, whether they were male or female or whether they were racialized people or not. And so I could have written a paper, but I didn't. I actually built a hacked radio. So I took a physical radio and hacked it. And now the radio has dials that allow you to tune to a particular radio station and then choose to find out how many women are on air in that station, and how many racialized women or how many white men are on the station. And the radio itself gives you feedback in terms of it plays back a soundscape of voices. If you've selected how many women are on this station, then you'll hear female voices, and they will play back at a loudness level that is commensurate with the percentage of women on the air at that station. And the other thing that happens is the antenna of the radio has been hacked to kind of move like a VU meter back and forth. Oh, so again, cool. It will go up if there's say 10% women on air at this radio station, then the antenna will kind of move up to a sort of 10% position. And then if you switch it to men and it's like, okay, it's 90% men, then the antenna will move to like the 90% position and loud men's voices will come out of the radio. So I guess I've always just kind of bristled at the idea that publication is the only, you know, quote unquote, valid way of disseminating knowledge and disseminating your research. I wanted to explore podcasting as that. So you and I got together. I told you all about a research project I have underway. You asked me some questions about it, poked some holes in it, and it was a really useful process for me. So we'll be putting out that podcast and then inviting people to comment on it. So whether they are scholars in the field or lay people, we're going to be inviting people to make whatever comments and insights and suggestions they have about that as part of an open review process.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it was a fascinating process for me because I was in a similar position. I mean, through podcasting, I kind of got back in touch with that idea, I think, that goes through, that really sort of underpins you if you're doing MA or PhD work, i.e. what is knowledge and how is it communicated, and how does the method of communication actually affect the knowledge? And I don't know what it's like in Canada. I mean, we all know what it's like in higher education more broadly in terms of the, as you said, the journal article is the be all and end all of where a set of research or a sense of knowledge is grounded, let's say, or anchored. But then, you know, we have to realize that text and textuality is a technology itself. You know what I mean? That created the spread of Enlightenment thinking in Europe itself, just because we could print books and we could print pamphlets. And so that technological process fashioned the kind of world that we live in. And it's so interesting that, you know, to read about oral histories and the way that knowledge was communicated before then was all about the voice and all about memory, which is, you know, fundamental to sort of podcasting and radio and that kind of thing. I think it's interesting that, you know, with the internet coming along, it made textuality even more important. You know, and we, as we've talked about, text messaging and everything, that's what people will text message before they'll speak to each other on a phone. But maybe we are moving now towards more of a sort of broadening out where orality or speech and what that actually gives to the information being conveyed is taken into account. And I think I'm with you on that idea of any way that we could use podcasting to disseminate and to discuss that information is really useful. And I think with the peer review, because the peer review again can be quite a rigid format in the way that, you know, you send your paper in and then you get some comments back and then you change it and then it's published and off we go. But that sense of having a discussion that goes through the process is a really interesting one. So, I mean, I don't know, it's been a week, hasn't it, since you've done it. Did your debrief come up with any new thoughts that you thought, ah, okay, so we need to think about this, we need to think about that?
Yeah, I'm still thinking about what we need to think about and how this...
Sorry, I was just, maybe that was a bit of a ramble.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, it brings up a lot of interesting points that I wanted to feedback on. I mean, you're talking about the primacy of text and the hegemony. I wanted to use that word. It's like a scholarly drinking game, right? Someone used the word hegemony, so take a drink. But the hegemony of text and as you say, we used to share our knowledge and culture through oral means, stories and so on. And maybe that's why we're so connected to stories that are told through podcasting, because of that kind of ancient feeling about it. But there are many researchers that are using podcasting as a means to collect data. So ethnographic research, you know, interviewing people, allowing people to tell their stories. And one of the things that would be really great if a podcast could be the sort of end result of the, you know, replacing a text-based publication, is that then it's no longer mediated. So no one is then just trying to describe in the paper what that person said and how they said it. You know, it will be left up to the listener to hear the nuances in that person's voice and the way they're choosing to talk about something and so on. So it's a less mediated way of gathering certain types of information and data. It also lays bare the process. So there's so much talk in our culture these days of, you know, at every graduation address, someone says, go forth and boldly fail.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone's saying fail. Failure well, is yeah, such yeah. a, you know, it's become a real asset to fail these days. But I mean, it is true. I mean, not everything is perfect. And the idea of the published paper is, you know, you go off in your corner and you perfect it. And then it's and then it's thought of as a completed, finished, you know, there's no longer anything more to be done with it. Whereas if in a podcast, when you talk about the process of conducting the research with a peer in the field and to talk about that, it lays open that process. It lays open the vulnerabilities, the potential problems that you faced. And I think that that's really important in knowledge creation. And I feel that that's kind of left out in traditional ways of putting out academic output.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that's of interest to me. And we're working on some stuff around that. And hopefully we'll be working together on this kind of area in the future. But Anna, Valentina, how did it go from your perspective? I've resisted the temptation to ask what's it like working with Laurie, but what were your thoughts on the session the other week and how the project has come together?
So, working with Laurie is amazing. We have a very interesting discussion.
It's Valentina, thank you.
But it was very interesting because I feel we went to record the podcast with an idea and we had everything so structured in our minds, you know, we go from this question to that question. And it was like so sort of like a timeline of what we wanted to do. We ended up being completely different, which I think it added so much value to the recording itself because the conversation took a route that was that needed to be there to that end. Because, for example, Dario, you covered things where you gave your opinion on certain things on Laurie's research that you thought were needed, valued, right? So I think that's exactly the point of peer review. You talk about the specific things that needs to be covered, that needs to be reviewed, needs to be, you know, reevaluated. And I think that's the whole point of it. Not necessarily to talk about the whole process of the research, but maybe specific things that can be reevaluated to ensure a higher research outcome. So I think at the end, it was very good that it took a very specific route. And I think if we do this project again with other research that is being conducted by another researcher, I feel the route will be completely different because there are other mistakes or maybe imperfections in the methodology or in the literature review in that specific project that the peer reviewer then will see, not necessarily to cover the whole process of it.
And it's interesting in the when you're doing a peer review on paper or receiving peer review yourself, you do fall to that kind of reaction of it's because the text is so finalized, it means that the reviewing is finalized, whereas we're having a conversation here and even like I could say something and then Laurie could answer it in a perfectly logical way or, you know, responding to my review and then that doesn't need to kind of go any further. So yeah, it's an interesting process in that sense. Anna, what did you think?
Yeah, I love what Valentina mentioned about having that specific route because we did plan. It was very rigorous. We did all the planning we possibly could. And then, you know, based on conversation, it just kind of flowed differently. And I think that's the nature of podcasting, which you can't fully foresee. And because it's the first episode, we couldn't really predict what direction or how conversational it would be. But I think that's what's going to make for it to be a great listening and also a useful tool when it comes to having that research and having that understanding. So I love that we were able to kind of just flow with it. It's going to be useful on all ends. So it's great.
Yeah. Just for our listeners, I was the peer reviewer in this instance and I was reviewing Laurie's research. So I don't know if I mentioned that earlier on, but I don't know, Laurie, were you weren't panicking at all that I was sort of, or we were both going off on different directions and thinking, oh, actually, I had an order in which this was supposed to happen. You know what I mean? Because it's difficult with podcasts to sort of contain it in that way.
Yeah, but
it?
That's fine. I mean, the reason we had a specific outline, so we had certain questions, and each of the questions was meant to kind of cover an area that would normally end up in a completed paper. So for example, you know, the first question was like, tell me about your research. It was the overall summary. It was almost like an abstract, like, what are we going to talk about here? And then, you know, the questions that followed tried to cover, okay, so then what was your methodology? What were some of the key ideas guiding the study, i.e., tell us about your literature review and what you found there. So what I was trying to do was at least provide a roadmap for the conversation that would hit on some of the major things that would normally end up in a completed paper. And so in this sense, I'm kind of bowing to the hegemonic, you know, text-based published paper by having the podcast be an intermediary between doing the research and then publishing it in that format. So there are different ways to use podcasts as research outputs or as part of the research. I mentioned that there are people that are using podcasting as like a data gathering tool. There's also Hannah McGregor from the University of British Columbia here in Canada has been working on a project for about peer reviewing, using podcast as a peer reviewed output. And so she used her own podcast, Secret Feminist Agenda, as a sort of test run. So she put out a different podcast each week in which she interviewed a feminist scholar about their work, or might not have even been a scholar each week. And then she asked peer reviewers to actually rate, you know, whether this format of podcast seemed like it could be a valid, you know, usable output for research. Like, could we just count this as something that has been a peer-reviewed research output? So it was really interesting to see that. And her approach was kind of like, here's a podcast that a general audience could enjoy, but we're also hoping to see the ways in which it can be thought of as a research output. So that was one approach. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm in between those two approaches, where the, you know, one approach is using podcasting as a data gathering tool. Hannah McGregor's approach was kind of more, here is a podcast series. Let's think about this in terms of, can it be thought of as peer-reviewed, as a peer-reviewed output? Mm. I wanted to kind of exist somewhere in the middle, where it's like, okay, let's use a podcast on the process towards publication. Eventually, I would love to be able to dispense with the publication part altogether and just be able to say, here's the podcast. This is the most immediate, accessible access to this knowledge, as opposed to, you know, going through this sometimes years long process of submitting it to a journal, yeah, having it reviewed. They get, you know, it can't be under review at any other journals at the same time. So if they turn you down, then you got to go find someone else. And so podcasting allows for a bit of an immediacy in terms of delivering the knowledge to the public, which I think is a huge role of ours as professors and scholars. And sometimes we forget that when we get wrapped up in the whole, you know, traditional way of doing things that doesn't really give the public access to the knowledge we're producing.
Sure. And do you see in terms of this particular one here, and you said that you're going to ask people to comment on the peer review on the podcast as a peer review, but do you see this sort of like, you know, eventually being like maybe one day in that future that you imagine and that I imagine, that podcasts are just accepted as research artifacts, let's say, that they would just go on a digital library and then people could look them up and cite them for their own research purposes, rather than, say, for example, trying to adapt this for a wider lay audience outside of academia? Or do those two things go hand in hand with each other for you?
Yeah, I think they go hand in hand. And I think that, you know, as a teacher of storytelling, we always tell our students, audience, who is this for, is always your first question before you produce anything. So I think that it's possible to serve both of those audiences, i.e., you know, the peers in the academic field, as well as a general audience. But I think that perhaps producing it differently would probably be in order, so that, you know, like the way we recorded our podcast, Dario, it was very much focused on the methodology, the analysis. Sure. You know, so I was thinking of that as being very much for a scholarly audience. However, I think because of the conversational nature of it, that doesn't preclude anyone from, you know, a more general audience from listening to it if it happens to interest them. However, I think if we wanted to make it truly accessible and appealing to a wider audience, we'd probably produce the podcast in a we take a completely different approach in producing it.
Mm. Yeah, it'd probably be needed to be cut down and maybe used as a segment in a broader kind of context, perhaps.
Yeah,
you know, I'm just thinking about, because it's funny. It's somewhat similar, isn't it, to when you write an article in an edited book, for example. Sometimes they ask you to cut out the methodology sections and stuff like that, and just focus on doing the analysis of a film or whatever it might be, because they just take it for granted that you know that, and they're trying to sell a book in some senses. But interesting to see where this goes further forward. And if they are you going to put out a link to that when it's available that we can share?
For sure, it should be available very soon. As we talk, okay, we're busily working on getting that out there, and right, we're providing a transcript and citations for everything and additional material. I don't know if it's ironic that I'm putting out a text-based transcript of this oral medium. I'm championing the orality of this medium. Mm. But I think in terms of it being scrutable and reviewable for the purposes of academic peer review, I think the transcript is necessary, not to mention accessibility issues around podcasting. All podcasts should have a transcript just for sheer accessibility. But I think that that allows for a level of scrutiny that would be perhaps a little more difficult just listening to a linear time-based conversation.
Sure. As long as you edit me so I make sense, that's the main thing.
Oh, yeah, no, I needed the most editing, don't you worry.
Great. So we're nearly up to an hour now. So just a couple of ones to finish. I mean, what's the future of podcasting? I mean, again, I'm trying to put that into a context where it's not the biggest question ever asked. You know, in terms of North America, because, you know, obviously you're Canada, not the United States, but it's interesting how the market over there is the driver, is often kind of considered the driver of podcasting sort of globally in a sense. But it seems to me that there is that element of podcasting, which is very much kind of commercially led and people are looking for the widest possible audience. And that there's a potential for that to narrow, you know, what is on the surface available mm-hmm. for people to listen to. But it doesn't seem to me that there is any waning of, let's say, people just starting podcasts for their own either enjoyment or because they want to focus on a niche topic, you know, whether it's academia or in any other sort of discipline. So I see, you know, I still see podcasting having that kind of depth of diversity. But again, maybe those sort of crossovers between podcasts that started off as nothing and became hugely successful. That's the thing I see changing. I don't know. Have you got any comments on that?
You know, I feel like I'd be a rich woman if I knew where all of this was going and so on. But yeah, I agree with you that there will always be room for those niche podcasts and those independent podcasts. And there will always be people who just, you know, it's a platform for people to have a voice and they don't necessarily care whether it's going to reach 100,000 downloads or 23 downloads, right? So there will always be that. There will always be the unexpected independent gems that just, you know, the stars align and they hit the big time. You know, I'm not sure anyone expected My Dad Wrote a Porno to be quite as popular as it was. That was just such an interesting one. The future of podcasting, I think it's bright. I think, you know, there are pundits that are saying, you know, now's the time to start a podcast because if you don't now, it will be too late because we're reaching saturation and, you know, it's kind of like there are no new ideas under the sun. Someone will have done the podcast that you're thinking of doing. I don't believe that's going to be the case ever. I mean, someone might have said that about popular music, like rock and roll when it came out. Oh, you know, if you haven't made rock and roll by 1965, you might as well forget it because everyone's done everything. You know, we're still making music today. So I think we'll still be making podcasts well into the future. We'll be listening to them. Whether the whole business driver of them will affect, you know, what they sound like. You know, maybe we are seeing that. I mean, you mentioned in the podcast we recorded last week that, you know, you feel like Malcolm Gladwell is selling you a car. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was so miffed by that when I heard Malcolm Gladwell just basically doing an entire podcast series about Lexus cars. And I thought, really, this is where we're going with this? Yeah. But, you know, I think that's inevitable in any medium that will happen, the massive commercial exploitation. But the great thing about podcasting as a medium is the accessibility for independent producers. And so we will always continue to see and to hear those interesting things on the fringe, which is so magical, the magical thing about podcasting.
Yeah, and I think that because it's a medium that requires the listener to actually make an effort to listen. And, you know, even if, as we were discussing last week, the idea of where do you discover podcasts, and even if that sort of discoverability does kind of narrow along the lines of the algorithms that the big techs want you to listen to, you know, if you've listened to this, then you will like this. You know, I think still that sense of, I mean, most of my podcast listening comes from recommendations. Mm-hmm. As much as anything else, really. So, you know, I think that's interesting. I mean, one of the things I'm starting to look at more and more now is the idea of AI technology and voice recognition, and how we're going to be, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to be talking to machines a lot more, and machines are going to be interpreting our voices a lot more, and what effect that might have on what podcasting is. I kind of envisage a world where podcasting is kind of like the cave paintings in 20 years time, where we're doing something really, you know, there's audio all over the place, and where everything that we say is being recognized in some way, shape or form. Again, you can take the utopian or the dystopian line as to what that might end up looking like or sounding like.
And how smart speakers play into that too. You know, the ubiquity absolutely. Of this in the home and the listening in on, you know, and being able to just call it up at any moment. And, you know, how smart speakers are affecting even the length of podcasts, that, you know, little short bursts are becoming more and more crucial, I think, for producers who want to be on various platforms, meaning they want to exist in a platform where someone is actually sitting and listening on their commute to a long podcast. And they also want to be on the smart speaker platform where someone's just like, I just woke up, I'm having my coffee, just tell me what's up. And so, you know, you get a 1 minute burst or a 2 minute burst from your favorite podcasts on that medium as part of the morning rundown. So that's another way.
No, there's definitely that more integrated sense of listening, I think, is definitely gonna happen. Mm-hmm. Valentina, Anna, I don't wanna say, you know, what does the future hold for you? Because, you know, I feel like we might get into sort of more depressing areas the way the world looks right now.
It's a bad
time
to ask.
I think there's reasons to be positive. But I don't know, in terms of the work that you're doing, you're coming towards the end of undergrad now. Are you both looking to go on and do more education, or do you want to go into kind of commercial areas? How do you see the future panning out for you?
That's actually a very interesting question, because I don't truly know, but I do know that I do not want to go to the commercial side whatsoever. I really want to focus my career in knowledge translation and accessibility. I feel there's like a huge gap between what academics know and what the general population should know about. And in terms of like text and audio, I know there's this huge thing like, oh, like if you're doing podcasts, like let's not talk about audio. If you're about text, if you're doing a podcast, let's not talk about text. And if you're writing a paper, let's not talk about audio. But I think there's just like different genres within scholarship, and this should be like they complement each other, right? So I feel there's a space for everything, and people consume technology and consume information in so many different ways. Like, I feel for my generation, Anna, we're kind of like, we're expected to know how to use this technology to communicate ourselves and to express our ideas. So that's how we gather and how we communicate ourselves in the world. So I feel scholarship is just like a little bit behind in terms of getting to the point where it actually communicates with the next generations coming up. So my goal as a student and a person who wants to focus my career on that is just like figure out ways where academia and scholarly work can get to the point where people, general population, can have access to valuable information.
I think for me, I'm understanding the importance, if you want to be a content creator, of having the research background in order to make effective media. One of our professors said you have to play, think, and then learn in order to really create media. So you need all three of those aspects. And so that really kind of pushed me behind wanting to develop my academic career further in order to really make effective media for children. And so I hope that by having an understanding of how I can create knowledge into a way that is effective, I remember all of, my Mr. Rogers episodes, and we were learning empathy. So I think there is a way to communicate research in podcasting. There's a way to communicate learning through children's programming. And so I just want to know how to create it in a way that's fun, but effective as well. So that's where I think the future for me holds. I don't know what it's going to look like with everything that's going on, but I'm definitely optimistic and excited to move forward.
Great. That's great. Great to hear. There's there's an awful lot of depressing news to deal with. So it's nice to hear some positivity. Just one last thing then from you all before we finish off. Is there anything, any particular podcast or series that you could recommend to our listeners? Maybe something that you know of that maybe they might not. Laurie?
Yeah, I'd love to recommend two actually. So
Go
one of
ahead.
them is called The Walking Podcast, and this is an intersection of a couple of my interests, obviously podcasting, but also soundscape recording. So I love recording soundscapes. I've done some sound art installations that involve soundscape recording and so on. And this is a podcast where the host simply goes for a walk. Through he lives in the Pacific Northwest of America, and he goes for a walk in the forest, on the trails, through various neighborhoods, and he doesn't say anything. And you just listen to the sound of his walk, and I find it incredibly mesmerizing and relaxing. And especially during, self-isolation and lockdown, it was really great to just listen to someone going for a walk in a different place than I was in. So I'd recommend that. It's definitely interesting and unusual. And the other one that I think is really great is it's called Missing and Murdered: Finding Cleo. This was a CBC podcast production, and it's entitled Missing and Murdered because, of course, there's been an inquiry in this country about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, which is a rampant problem. And it's part of the systemic racism that exists in this country against Indigenous peoples. And, that our police forces don't investigate these murders or missing people the same way they would for white people. And it's a story about a girl who was an Indigenous girl who was taken from her family in the 70s. There was part of what was called the 60s scoop, where Indigenous children were taken from families and adopted into white families. So she was at the tail end of the 60s scoop, and she turned up dead. Anyway, it's basically a true crime podcast. However, it's a true crime podcast with a very strong social justice lens, which I really, really appreciate because there's something a bit cringy about true crime. We kind of, there's something in us all that we kind of want to know. It's like not being able to look away from, a car crash or something like that. But there's something salacious about that. And this one is really has a strong social justice lens and tells the story very delicately, very sensitively, and I think it should actually be required listening for every Canadian for us to help us understand our own culture of genocide against Indigenous peoples in this country.
I'm very interesting to listen to this one, Laurie. I haven't heard of it. I the podcast I'm listening, I listen to two podcasts now. One is called Ologies by Ellie Ward, and then she just talks like about a specific field. The one that I listened a while ago is about kissing. So she's interviewed an expert in kissing, and then they go on this tangent. It's very interesting. I absolutely love. She's a comedian, so it's a very funny podcast in terms of like science. I'm very big fan of this podcast. And the other one that I listen frequently is called Research in Action. I'm not sure if it's from Oregon State University. I think it is, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But the person just interviews experts on certain research fields, and then they talk about like implications for the real world and how it's very conversational, which I like, and it's like 30-minute long podcast, which is all I also like. I don't really love long hour podcasts, but it's very interesting because what I like about that podcast is they have like these PDF files with like learning outcomes
Oh,
and other materials that you can learn more about it. So yeah, those are two podcasts that I'm currently listening to.
great. I wonder what the methodology is on the research on kissing.
Well, he said the expert said he used to go to these clubs and these bars with his notebook and just like take notes on everything.
That's not creepy at all.
Oh, that's not
Observation
creepy.
only. Yeah, I get it. I was gonna say. Anyway.
It was very interesting.
Yeah. Anna?
Yeah, my podcast right now is actually on the opposite spectrum for parents. It's because I want to learn more about children's programming podcasts. So there's a podcast from CBC called Ty Asks Why, and he asks all kinds of questions. Like he asks about death, he asks questions about I think he also in relationships as well. And so he just really goes into any question about like let's say black holes for example, and we just get an understanding of why we have black holes. He goes to professional, so it's very exploring new concepts for kids, and I find it interesting actually. So
And he's like 12 years old, right? Or something like that, as the host. Yeah.
He's a great host, and he's a kid, but he's so enthusiastic and knowledgeable. I think that's a fantastic podcast. Lori and I were actually talking about articles of interest, which is really great. There's an episode on Suits, And so we learn about suits and they get really in depth with the conversation. And that's kind of an arts and fashion podcast. So that's a good listen as well.
Wonderful. Well, to all of you, thanks so much for taking the time out to join me on the podcast. I really enjoyed that conversation, and you know, wish you all luck, Laurie, with the, you know, obviously with the project and the future research, which we'll talk about again, no doubt.
Thank you.
And you guys, good luck in your further studies.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us on, Dario. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. This has been really fun. Thanks.